From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
Are we on fire here at TNT Radio? I believe we are, and it's not just here, of course, but it's all around the world, and the Twitterverse is actually exploding. It seems that we can't have a show anymore without quoting Elon Musk or the adventures of Twitter. And today I even went and set my own Twitter page up. I jumped out of there a couple of years ago. I couldn't stand the place, but I decided to set up a Jason Q Citizen Twitter page, and it's up there, and I've been retweeting a few things, and I've just discovered something that I think would have to be the tweet of the day from a fellow called Alex Bring Them Back. He said that Elon Musk didn't just buy a company, he purchased a crime scene. Absolutely unbelievable quotes, and here we are. And you and me and all of us here are listening and participating in the changing of the guard. We are, in fact, the news now, aren't we? Absolutely riveting. And to recap, in the last hour, it was wonderful to have Joe Nova on the program. Goodness me, isn't she something else? But Kate Shouten, who was in Victoria, responding to a request, an SOS from Emily Coltrane, Voice of Victoria, on the anomalies in the Daniel Andrews election. And she went down there and has uncovered a whole bunch of really dirty, murky and unapologetic situation here, where the obvious is the fact that they won't count the preferencing in the seat of Mulgrave, which distorts the next election when they automatically go to another two-party preferred and they assume Labor and Liberal. It's just shortcutting for convenience and doesn't get to the bottom of it when you have compulsory preferential system. Kate also uncovered that they hadn't run out of ballots, and instead of getting more ballots sent over, they were actually having people handwrite ballots on a blank sheet of paper, throwing them in the box and counting them. They found unmatched serial numbers of ballot boxes, which means that there's no chain of evidence there in terms of the voting itself. And of course, there was the ballot draw in itself that for the first time was an electronic ballot and resulted in Daniel Andrews being the first of 14 on the ballot paper. How convenient. And then people handing out saying to voters, just vote 1 to 14, pushing their hand from the top to the bottom of the list. All of this is coercive one way or another. Truly, truly extraordinary. Now, the plot thickens in all of this, the narrative falling apart almost simultaneously. This may well be the best Christmas we've had in years for those of us who believe in freedom and liberty in all of where we're going. The narrative, as I said, falling apart in New South Wales today. We're seeing it revealed secretly at 11:59 p.m. on 30th November. All requirements, provisions and exemptions under the public health order in New South Wales have been repealed. This means there are no active public health orders in New South Wales. The public health orders under Section 7 of the Public Health Act 2010 were made by the Minister for Health and Medical Research to manage the public health risk of COVID-19 and its possible consequences has all ended in New South Wales. A big yay, cheer for that one, but of course no official announcement. So they will just continue to make implications, therefore, to follow tyrannical government. It certainly is one thing. It's one thing to deny treatment and state that this is that it's dangerous to take an alternative therapeutic, and they did this to us with vitamins, vitamin D, in fact, to protect against COVID. It's another to come out after COVID is virtually over to say now that the vitamin is not dangerous, but in fact effective and, of course, safe. And meanwhile, the opposite is true for the one-size-fits-all solution that it turns out is nothing and fits no one at all, being the vaccine. And when we looked at just yesterday, the latest New South Wales health statistics that are now matching up around the world, and we show this in the program, that the CDC out of the United States says that 92% of COVID deaths in the United States now occur in people 65 plus. This wasn't the case. It was only 58% a year ago. It's now 92%. So in other words, as the virus becomes more and more mutated, which means it becomes more and more virulent, more people catch it, it's less dangerous. dangerous to otherwise healthy and younger people. In New South Wales, we reported yesterday there were 25 deaths in COVID in the week up to November 26, 25 deaths in the state, 609 hospitalizations. But out of those 25 deaths, 12 of them, roughly 50%, occurred in people who had taken four or more doses of COVID vaccine. Six had taken three doses and five had taken two doses. That means that one person had been unvaccinated and one was unknown. Unknown refers to a vaccine taken overseas that doesn't match the vaccines here. One person in New South Wales was unvaccinated who died out of 25. That's roughly 4%. And we know that 96% of people took two vaccines officially in this state. So if you're unvaccinated, you're not underperforming in any way, shape or form the vaccine. The vaccine is an out-and-out failure. It's not providing any advantage at this point. Of those people that passed, 24 of 25 were aged 60 plus. And that's because it's an age band. There was, strangely, one person aged in the 20 to 29 bracket. We don't know what their comorbidities were. And it was the first death in anyone under 50 in about 3 months, according to official New South Wales health data. So this is truly extraordinary. The report from Mercola on the vitamin D, researchers from Johns Hopkins University, University of Chicago, and the Department of Veteran Health Affairs conducted a large-scale pharmacoepidemiological study of the association between vitamin D and COVID-19 infection and mortality. And those that took vitamins D2 or vitamin D3 in total had a 48% lower risk of COVID infection, and death from COVID-19 was also lower amongst those taking vitamin D, 33% lower amongst those taking vitamin D3 and 25% in those taking vitamin D2. If the entire US population in 2020 had been supplemented with vitamin D3, and the point here is that 80% of the planet appears to be underdosed or have a lower vitamin D level than they should. If the entire population had taken or supplemented with vitamin D3, it would have prevented 4 million COVID-19 cases and 116,000 deaths. That means that everyone at the CDC, Anthony Fauci, every other bureaucrat with anything to do with doctor in their name needs to be held account. And according to Mercola, he says he strongly recommends getting your vitamin D from proper sun exposure if possible, as it will provide numerous other benefits, many of which are only beginning to be understood. And that's right. Vitamin D, primarily you get from the sun. The idea is you get exposure on your hands and feet and through natural sunlight. Obviously, you can get it in the morning, you can get it in night, get it throughout the day. But this is one way. It just means getting out there. So the opposite was true. Stay inside, stay locked down, keep a mask on your face, keep covered up is absolutely the opposite of what we're being told in all of this. Goodness me. For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT Radio.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And if that wasn't enough, Darren from Plymouth is here with a story to confirm that TNT Radio and all of the hosts here have been right all along. The former UK vaccines chief says the incidence of myocarditis is higher than most of us anticipated. Here's more, Darren.
Yeah. Hi, Jason. Happy Friday to you. Happy Friday to all the listeners. I'm particularly glad it's Friday. I'm looking forward to the weekend. Yeah. Sir John Bell has told British members of Parliament the boosters aren't really providing any prolonged protection against transmission. And his biggest issue with the mRNA vaccines is the incidence of myocarditis, particularly in young people. He also said it was possible there was an accidental lab leak in Wuhan. Now, we are getting dribs and drabs, drip, 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 drip in the mainstream press in the UK. Little bits of truths are coming out about the COVID, lockdowns, restrictions, and the vaccines. Now, John Bell is a Regius Professor of Medicine at Oxford. He played a critical role in the development of the Oxford AstraZeneca shot, which was the first shot to be pulled, quietly from almost every country on the planet. He was an early member of the government's vaccine task force. He also said a successful vaccination campaign might sterilize 80% of the population. I'm not sure if he was talking about reproductive sterilization, but that's what he said. He then went on to tell members of parliament how safe and effective the vaccine was. Even though he was responsible for the AZ vaccine, the first one to get pulled, I'm not going to repeat any of that and go straight on to the myocarditis bit. So while questioning Bell, Labour MP Rebecca Long-Bailey quoted the health advisory and recovery team, Hart, and raised concerns about a number of possible side effects from COVID-19 vaccines. Hart is an organisation that was set up to share concerns and policy and guidance recommendations relating to the COVID-19 pandemic. The three vaccines, but particularly the two vaccines which we are using now, have got pretty good safety profiles. That does not mean that they are not without some minor issues that need to be tracked, obviously, Bell said. The biggest issue with the mRNA vaccines, in my view, is the incidence of myocarditis, particularly in young males aged 15 to 30. This is observed very early on, originally by the Israelis, and everyone replicated it. So Israeli was the Pfizer test bed. They identified this probably early on. 2 years ago now, almost, they identified this problem, and yet they still went on and delivered the vaccine to billions of people. I think the real question is, first of all, the incidence of that myocarditis is higher, I think, than most of us anticipated. Bell pointed to scientific papers in Canada and in the United States that showed an incidence in that particular age group where 1 in 30,000 males will get myocarditis that's severe enough to seek medical attention in hospitals. That's a higher number than you like, he said. Bell claimed that myocarditis goes away, but I think there's an interesting question about whether there might be some long-term effects of that, and that requires continual scrutiny. Now, pushing back against this was a consultant pathologist and Hart member, Dr. Claire Craig, who has done amazing work over here in the UK. And she made it very clear to the Epoch Times, where this full article is available if you want to look at it, that myocarditis is not mild. The thing is how you measure it. Basically, whenever you see safety issues with drugs, you'll see that over time. How bad it was in terms of incidence, it gets worse as it's measured more carefully. And that's exactly what we see with myocarditis, she said. We've absolutely seen measurements that are far worse than 1 in 30,000. Craig said that historical myocarditis that people have gotten from other causes and not the mRNA vaccines isn't benign, as a certain percentage may need a heart transplant and the mortality rate is high. When you're saying how serious it is with the vaccine, then you first have to check you are measuring it right and chase those patients up and see what's happening to them. In the short term, it seems to be mild for a proportion of people, she said. But if you've still got problems months on sometimes, you can't be calling that mild. A teenager or someone in their 20s or 30s with heart problems for months, that's not mild. And when you've got myocarditis, heart cells have been damaged and you can't replace your heart cells. They are not replaceable. So you'll be left with a damaged heart for the rest of your life, albeit in a very minor way. But until we've had some time for a proper follow-up, we don't know what that means. So this John Bell, who's a dubious character, he appeared quite a lot on British television, is categorically lying when under questioning to British Parliament. He may be quoting real figures from whatever article or scientific paper that he's using when he's saying 1 in 30,000 males. But we have seen figures that suggest 1 in 4,000. There have been even smaller odds on contracting myocarditis or pericarditis from these mRNA products. But at the same time, I think this is an exercise in a damage control as the excess deaths in the UK continue and have done consecutively for about 29 weeks now, where we have had over 10% and sometimes up to as high as 20, 21, 22% excess deaths on a weekly basis. And we have been warned now by our chief medical officer, a guy called Chris Whitty, a man who never blinks. Very, very strange. He is now saying we are going to continue because of lockdowns and restrictions to see excess deaths for the immediate and maybe as far as the midterm future. So what's that, 5-10 years? We're going to continue to see excess deaths. No one though is blaming the vaccines, but they're just trying to do a bit of damage control, Jason.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because, of course, a vaccine takes about 10 years to discover how, if it's going to work or not. And this is the period that we're actually seeing the live experiment, as Australia's own former health minister, Greg Hunt, said. This is the biggest experiment of all time. Daniel Andrews tweeted this before COVID even happened, that there would be a very large experiment in the year of 2022. Very strange what he knew at that time. But let's take a quick look at what you've just pulled up there. First of all, groupthink, take the vaccine. Guilt, do it for Nana. COVID is serious. Uh-huh. No, it's not. 99.75% survival rate, all ages, all health morbidities, comorbidities. COVID, for most people, particularly those of working age, it is a cold or a flu, nothing more. The side effects, what are the risks? Well, we're going to pretend that there aren't any. We're going to tell you that's safe and effective. The side effects, in fact, are the opposite. So weighing up a cold and a flu for 2 days versus a permanent heart muscle damage, myocarditis, pericarditis, heart attack, stroke, obviously these are the most lethal. And for a very long time, heart health, certainly in this country, in the Western world, was at an all-time low. If you had a heart attack, you didn't die from a heart attack. You went to a hospital, you got a stent put in, and you got on with the rest of your life. You made some dietary changes, you got some medicine, and you got on with it. It was never a big thing. Now, all of a sudden, it's bigger than it's ever possibly been. The idea of freedom of choice to choose your whether you took it or not was taken away through mandates and other forms of ways that they were tricking people. The idea of informed consent, the denial of said informed consent, which denying it is an actual crime. And then, of course, coercion, yet another crime, and these add up to a crime against humanity. And in all of this, with the manipulation of various different data situations, we know that for those people aged 0 to 29 in this country, it's a 1 in 35,000 fatality rate from COVID of all ages with the manipulated data that we're getting. And these guys are saying it's a 1 in 30,000 or something that are getting myocarditis, which is absolute nonsense because we know VAERS data is 1 in 10 underreported to 1 in 100 underreported. And I'll tell you right now, I do not know of a single person, certainly in any group that I know in Australia, that's died from COVID. There's only been a handful, maybe 10 or 15 overall, but I tell you what, I know of many, many people who have gotten myocarditis, men and women, even outside of the age groups of 0 to 30, 0 to 40. I know people in their 50s who are getting myocarditis. I've never known so many people being sick, so many people with heart attack and stroke, and everyone knows someone who's died of a heart attack and stroke in this situation in the last year or two that's never, ever, ever happened before, and we haven't even got into the cancer story. So like you said, this is damage control. These people are out of their minds, and they know that the justice bus is on its way and they're all going to get on it. Darren, before you go, tell us who you got on the show today.
Yeah, I've got my old mucker, Rohan Heatley. He is a psychology researcher, a geek, gamer geek, and a historian. And we do a roundup of the week's stories. And actually, we're going to be purely focusing really today on what's been going on in China. So please come join me on Digging Deeper at 11 a.m.
Wonderful. Well, that's 11 a.m. UK time. Coming up next, thanks, Darren. I've got Trevor Kitchen in the waiting room ready to come on. Trevor is a financial whistleblower, and his story is truly unbelievable. You don't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
As an expert in international law, what's your position on Julian Assange's case?
I am a great admirer of Julian Assange, as I am an admirer of Edward Snowden and of other whistleblowers. Since my time as a UN staff member, and I was for decades a senior lawyer with the United Nations and the High Commissioner for Human Rights here in Geneva, I have been pleading for the drafting and adoption of a Charter of Rights of whistleblowers, because I think that whistleblowers are eminent human rights defenders. We need them desperately because our governments lie to us. Our governments commit war crimes and crimes against humanity in our names. And we don't know about it because secrecy is the key.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A deadly virus emanating from Wuhan, China is sweeping across the globe.
Something is off.
The disease caused by the novel coronavirus has been titled COVID-19.
What we're being told doesn't add up.
It's so important in this crisis that we in. That people
Congress passes a multi-billion-dollar bill that will bring...
There is no cure, no way to treat this illness. All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
All we can do
is wait for a vaccine.
There must be a doctor out there who's questioning this.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm the vice chairman of internal medicine.
The only chance to reduce the risks of hospitalization is early home treatment. We can beat this pandemic.
Patients actually think the virus is untreatable. There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now?
The pressure to suppress any hope of treatment is extraordinary.
Why the single-minded focus on the vaccine? What is that? What is that about?
That's really going to be the goal of investigative reporters to figure this out.
Unprecedented lockdowns, devastating economic damage, huge violations of personal freedom, families separated from their loved ones, all in the name of a medical emergency.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to the entire world.
The hope we have of protecting our communities is to get a needle in every arm.
I am not going to follow what you are suggesting and let the virus slaughter my patients.
John, I'm watching what's happening. This is a treatable illness.
I don't think this is a matter of academic debate and confusion. What the evidence shows is that this is an organized criminal enterprise. They call this a business opportunity.
People need to know the truth.
We are witnessing the greatest organized crime in history, to the tune of trillions of dollars.
The biopharmaceutical complex is using censorship, propaganda, and manipulation to keep people living in fear. But what we need now is courage.
The Courage to Face COVID-19. Available at CourageToFaceCOVID.com.
We listen to stuff online.
Online.
Listen online.
TNTRadio.live. Be a part of the conversation and follow TNT Radio on Gab, Getter, and Twitter.
TNT.
Welcome back to the program. Trevor Kitchen is a British former financial chief who is fighting extradition to Switzerland, of all places, on a charge of alleged criminal defamation that he fears is revenge for him blowing the whistle on a multi-billion pound currency scandal. Trevor is a 70-year-old man who is being taken literally to the cleaners for simply telling the truth, and they're making his life an absolute misery. Trevor, welcome back to Jason Q Citizen and Friends.
Thanks, Jason. Nice to be back with you. And thanks for having me on your show. I'm actually coming up to 72 now, can you believe it? This has been going on for a couple of years, this persecution, and it's having a devastating effect on my wife and myself, to be perfectly honest. The Swiss have refused to remove the arrest warrant from the Schengen, you know, the famous European Union's Schengen information system, which is meant to give people freedom of movement. It does anything but, Jason. In fact, what it does is it ties people down. They're even checking people in hotels, the police. They check your, in Europe, I'm talking about in Europe now, they check the usage of electricity meters, water meters, to see who's staying where, when, and how. So although they've got this wonderful freedom of movement, it's not so free as they'd have you believe.
It's... so upsetting, Trevor, to realize that that your life has been completely turned upside down for doing what any human being would do when they discover that something is wrong in all of this, and the punishment that you and your wife are receiving is just totally unacceptable. To destroy lives the way that's gone on, unfortunately, it exists, and we know that it does. And knowing the situation that you're in, we can only sympathize. eyes and try and assist where we can. I guess that the question to ask at this point before we get into the detail is, if you had your time over again, what would you have done differently?
Well, I certainly wouldn't report crime, because I don't really regard myself as a whistleblower. A whistleblower is someone who's, the way I see it, is, you know, people who work in companies who have a grievance with their firm of something, and then they go and take documents and they report those to the regulators and so forth. I didn't do this. I was an external whistleblower, a little bit like Harry Markopoulos, who did the Bernie Madoff whistleblowing. Mm. I noticed something while I was trading on the currency markets, and I phoned up a law firm, a whistleblowing law firm, and I said, look, I'm not a whistleblower, but I'm trading the markets and I see something is not quite right. Currency rates are not moving naturally like you would expect with import-export trade. The Swiss franc is taken off and is appreciated 150% against the dollar and the pound. Now, those were major currencies. And if we just jump back to your previous show that you were talking with the young lady there about, I think it was pensions, wasn't it? And money.
Yes.
And, you know, she's hit the nail on the head, because where does that money go? I mean, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, I used to look at this and ask these wonderful bankers, and they had all these glossy magazines. Where are you putting these pension contributions? Where are they going? And they came up with these fancy, you know, as I said, glossy magazines, and we're putting it in the Asian fund or the Celtic Tiger and things like this. And I would say, well, yeah, that's nice. Nice wording, nice glossy brochures. But what are you actually doing with that money? Now, I was working in finance, and this is going off our subject, but it's going back. I'll come back to it in a minute. I worked in finance all of my life at controller level. So I had quite a lot of responsibility. And one of the firms that I was working in Switzerland, we used to put our pension money with Asia Brown Bavari, which is a Swiss company, ABB. They used to be called Brown Bavari. And we put our company pension fund in there. And one year I noticed that the total equity on each person's capital each year had dropped by about 70%, the sum insured. So I contacted the fund, because I was at that level of management that I could. And I said, you know, the contributions are remaining the same, but the total equity, the sum assured, has dropped by 70%. How can that happen? Well, I got a phone call from Paris, from a lawyer, telling me to keep my mouth shut. Jump forward 5 years later, they found out that two of the guys running the fund, two Swiss guys, had run off with 300 million Swiss francs. Dick Brown, who was the president of the company I worked in, was later fired. But these two guys were made to pay back the 300 million that they'd taken out of the Swiss pension fund. That's about it on that, Jason. But they never went to prison. And here they are, the same Swiss people, chasing me for reporting things like that. And reporting currency manipulation and things. And also, my recent case was reporting a banker and a lawyer who were defrauding me after I'd worked for the banker for 6 years as a private investment advisor. They didn't want to pay me, so they started threatening me with lawsuits of defamation, and that's a crime in Switzerland. And I said, where are we taking this? Why are you coming with the criminal case? And he said, you called my client a parasite, and you named him some pretty bad things and in emails, so we're going to take a criminal case against you for that. And that's where all this started. And my lawyers wouldn't believe that, someone would take this far. So they sort of connected it to the whistleblowing on the currency manipulation. They said it must have been that. It couldn't have been nobody would chase any. I'm still under house arrest, basically. I'm in hiding, if you like. And my wife and I, we can't get on with our lives because these Swiss will just not remove this Schengen arrest warrant. So although I'm free where I am, because I've had a Supreme Court decision throw the whole thing out, every single country I go to, Jason, they will start the same process, take you, detain you, lock you up, go through the process of the courts, and the courts will probably find me innocent and they won't extradite me, but I've got to pay all the law, the lawyer's fees, and all these things. And that's where it becomes an abuse of the European arrest warrant, which we've spoken about before.
Absolutely. There's many, many follow-ups to what you've just said. We're going to pause for news headlines and come straight back and continue the conversation here with Trevor Kitchen on TNT Radio.
Question.
Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. China has blasted the BBC, accusing the British broadcaster of making up lies to tarnish Beijing's image in the West as it clamps down on COVID protests. Ukraine has again been accused of shelling civilians in the centre of the Donetsk city in the country's east, and France has admitted it has run out of weapons to send to Ukraine as the endless flow of arms depletes Western stockpiles.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Trevor, we talk about the idea of free speech, and yet there's a crime in Switzerland, the idea of defamation, and normally defamation would be public. Someone's reputation is ruined by something else. So I don't understand how they can even arrive at the idea of a charge for defamation that's in a private email. It makes no sense. So clearly it's a form of entrapment one way or another. And as you alluded to, the idea that it's retribution for something else, which is damaging these people's idea that they can get access to free money through an illegal trading scheme, which is really what this story is all about here. Have I summed that up correctly?
I think you have. And, you know, on this very important subject of free speech, we've just heard the advert about lies. They tend to lie a lot, these people. And I'm not the only one. This has happened with a lot of people who have been taken. And, you know, with these arrests that are happening in Europe, what they can do is, because they've got this giant super state now called the European Union, it's a bit like the United States. When they want to take someone from one state into the other, they issue this arrest warrant. And it's not just about they're abusing, let's say, laws like defamation laws. They're actually making up lies as they go along. Because what they added to mine, Jason, was threats. They said, oh, in one of your emails, you'd made a threat. And my threat was, well, I'll blow the whistle. And they took that out of the context when they presented it to the court. They said, this person said, well, I'll try another way. And that put the banker in a state of fear. But what they forgot to say was that I'd try another way, blowing the whistle. And 95% of the people that I'd written to were public authorities, you know, police. And I wasn't afraid. I was going to the prosecutor's office and telling them what was going on. So this silencing, this way of silencing public is getting very creepy. And what I've noticed is that these government agencies are becoming more and more secretive, more unapproachable, unaccountable for their actions. But in the meantime, Jason, what they're doing is they're getting us, the public, to be an open book, you know, on your mobile phone, on your computer. Yes. You've got to be completely open. You know, they get put software on your computer that takes all your contact details. You look at the terms and conditions of these apps that people are using on phones, and they're taking everything from people. But when you pick up the phone or you look in the internet for, say, a government body or organization, and you phone that number, you get an answer machine, or you get a person who just says, well, you can't get through to that person. So they're not accountable, but we are, the public. And this is getting dangerous, I think. This is really, if you look back at some of the older judges who are probably about 85 years of age now, and some of the comments that they're making on these, what's happening in the world with speech and expression, they say that it's leaving a chilling effect on society. It is a way of controlling. In the end, we start to self-police. I'm even correcting myself as I talk now, not to sort of put myself deeper in trouble, if you know what I mean. And that's not good. If we can't, if humans cannot go out and speak what their mind and talk, then you're under a dictatorship and being controlled. That's it. It really is like Minority Report. You know that movie,
yes.
If anybody's seen it.
Absolutely. Isn't it funny how fiction becomes fact in many ways, and many of us are going back and watching these old films, even though Minority Report is kind of a modern a Steven Spielberg film with Tom Cruise, but of course 1984 and Brave New World and many of these other films, they're all and the other one, of course, is Blade Runner, would you believe? The idea, I made a comment in my opening monologue this week in one of the shows that perhaps that the trans agenda, the idea of accepting that science now can say that I call it science of convenience or feel science, whereby anyone can just make up their own gender, it's no longer scientifically attached, is a way of softening the blow here that we may have to therefore just accept that AI robots are people, are sentient beings in the future. And I think that this is the idea, this slippery slope, this trap in all of this, and that plays down the idea of Blade Runner, which was all about the synths, the synthetic people, the robots here. I mean, it's all just being playing out. What would be the agenda behind that? Well, then it comes down to the idea that you can be replaced in employment, in process work, that we don't need to employ a human being that needs a wage and food, etc. We'll get a robot to do it that only needs a little bit of energy through a battery or something to do the same job. And therefore, humans have actually made themselves redundant. People fall into the trap, Trevor, and this is going off into some tangents here, but the idea of being paid a basic income simply because you don't work. I mean, how long is that going to last before you're made redundant via taking another one of these magical vaccines that, oh, sorry, that one didn't work either. You're not here anymore. I mean, we're not very far off this. And when you have government that's dishonest, and when you have Switzerland, the country of neutrality, that's anything but, this is yet another one of these situations that I harp on a lot in all of this, which is wherever you're not allowed to look or not meant to look, is exactly where the big trick is. And you've got a lot to say about Switzerland in all of this, because this is the one country. I want to get into the idea that what you've provided some information to me on is the unsentenced detainees as a proportion of overall prison population for the last 20 years. And Switzerland, unbelievably, at the top of the list. Tell us more.
Yeah, I know. It's the highest in Europe. And the reason for that is that the judges sitting at the top, many of them are, well, I can't go as far as saying they're corrupt, but they don't work as well as they should. And there have been professors of law in Switzerland writing this, saying that they have delegated, the politicians have delegated down to the prosecutors in Switzerland, the right to judge as well as prosecute. So they have amazing powers, prosecutors in Switzerland. So what they can do is they can just come round to your house and say, we've got a suspicion that you've committed a crime, so you're guilty before you're proven innocent, and we're going to arrest you and we're going to put you in detention. And those prosecutors have the power to hold you in detention, hold a person in detention for up to 6 months before they see a judge. And some of those people have had that delayed up to 2 years. Now, there was one just last week. His name is Brian, and it was all over the news in Switzerland. He's a 27-year-old guy, and he's been in prison for the last 10 years in Switzerland with no trial. Yes, I'm not joking. He's been in prison, and that was all over the news. They did a special show on it in Switzerland. It's been in the UK's Guardian newspaper. One of the journalists covered it. And what they did, what they do in Switzerland, going back to what we mentioned earlier about lies, is they invent these lies to provoke people, just like they did with me with my defamation case. They start writing and they lie. And when you go back to them and say, could you please clarify that lie? they look at that as a provocation then. And then they say, now we're going to add threats to your charges because you're threatening us. And we feel, you know, easily offended type of thing. And we're going to, yeah. And this is precisely what happened to me. I mean, they started calling me a monster because I told the guy to shove his money where the sun doesn't shine. They called me a monster. They said that's monstrous to say things like that. And it made the person who was a 55-year-old banker feel very offended and hurt, and that I'd hurt this person deeply. And I said, well, you know, I think you've done more damage to me by throwing me in prison than I did to hurt him with a few words. But yes, this is the case in Switzerland, and they do have the highest detention rate in Europe. And it's not decent detention. They throw people in those prisons in Switzerland in solitary confinement, and they try to make those people disturbed, mentally disturbed. They're doing that deliberately. I've spoken to a few previous persons who have been in prison in Switzerland. They've said to me, do not come back to Switzerland to try and sort this case out, because they will grab you, they'll put you in prison, and they'll make you look like the one who's wrong. Because the last thing they want is the truth getting out. What they want is to silence you. And that's what they do.
So this is,
it's shocking. As you said, coming from a country like Switzerland, they've got the illusion, people around the world have got the illusion that Switzerland is this wonderful country where they do everything correctly. It's not. I mean, I got to 70 years of age, Jason, and I thought, well, I've done my work in Switzerland. I worked 28 odd years in there. I've done a good job. I'd never been in trouble. And this is the way they repaid me.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, a lifetime's worth of work. Trevor, I just want to make the point on the data that you've provided. It's from a website called Our World in Data, and there's a story behind that. It only was just revealed this week that that particular website rejected a financial contribution, would you believe, from FTX, the cryptocurrency exchange that's gone into collapse and appears to be a Ponzi scheme. So therefore, we can contend that Our World in Data was going to perhaps be manipulated by some money, and they've rejected it. So we now know that Our World in Data is authentic. Now, the particular data that we're talking about here for our listeners, unsentenced detainees as a proportion of overall prison population between the years of 2003 and 2020. Now, everyone in the world today, apart from the listeners of TNT Radio and a few others, would think that Russia would be at the top of the list, the most tyrannical country exactly. in the world, jumping into Ukraine and all these horrible crimes against humanity. Well, in Russia, from that 17-year period, the absolute peak was around about 15% of its entire prison population were unsentenced at the time of being imprisoned, but the average has been around about 10% the entire time, and as low at some point around about 8.5%. Switzerland, during this entire period of time, has never had a figure below 41% of its entire prison Shocking. Population yeah. is unsentenced. This is probably yeah. the greatest human rights crime I think I've seen in my entire time following the media, to think that the angelic, neutral Switzerland is nothing but a cover for the biggest tyranny we've ever seen. Trevor, this alone is yet another story that is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, we need a lot of time to talk about that. And as you say, it's over 40%. The only country that's even lifted a finger to help me on that chart is Russia. I approached the Russian embassy here where I'm living, and I said, would you give me some sort of passport or exile because of what's happening? And they said, well, fill out a form, get in touch with us, come up and visit us. They were the only ones that responded, wow. Russia, not the UK. I've contacted the UK. The UK are refusing to renew my passport. They won't even renew my passport because I left Holland. And I left Holland. It's not a crime to escape extradition, because there's no, you don't get extradited for a crime. You get extradited for a suspicion of a crime. So the lawyers in Holland told me, well, you're not running away. It's not a crime to run away, you know, if you can't afford to stay in Holland. So I did nothing wrong. I didn't jump bail as such. I just left the country because I couldn't afford to stay there. But yes, everything surrounds Switzerland. And by the way, Charles Schwab, as much as they say he's German, his whole family are Swiss. They're all Swiss. He was born just across the border. And, you know, Switzerland has an amazing power in this world. All of these companies, these holding companies, Glencore, who controls vast amounts of the world's mineral resources, are all based in Switzerland. And they're there primarily for one reason, and that is to avoid tax, to lower the taxes for the ultra-rich people, the shareholders. They don't even pay taxes. They have things called tax holidays in Switzerland. So they plant a holding company in Zug, usually. Those are one of the cheapest cantons for taxes. And they let them stay there and pay 1% tax. But who benefits? It's only the shareholder. It's not the people in the street. Yeah. In fact, the people in the street lose out, especially the people from other countries. Because what they're doing with this, Jason, and this is a subject on its own, is they're transferring wealth from other countries into Switzerland for the shareholders who hold those corporate accounts in Switzerland. That is the key. And how they do that is through transferring, you know, they bill everything from Switzerland. They just invoice from Switzerland for goods that are leaving countries like Nigeria, the USA, Australia, and so forth. So that the taxes are not taken in those countries. And this was happening in the UK the other year during Brexit with, I think, what was this coffee shop called? Starbucks, where they plant them in places like the head office in other countries like Ireland, and then they lower the taxes there. You know, it's a race to the bottom with avoiding taxes, basically. But it ultimately, it's the public who pay for that.
Absolutely. Trevor, we'll quickly pause for a break and we'll come back and talk more in more detail after that. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Oh, it is on. It is on like Donkey Kong. Mike Lindell announced on Steve Bannon's War Room today that he will be seeking the office of Republican National Committee Chairman, trying to oust one of the McFailure triplets. That would be Ronna McDaniel. We'll always give Ronna credit for bringing Michigan in for Trump in 2016. But Ronna, what have you done for us in the last 5 years? Precious little. Mike Lindell has the experience, the temperament, the expertise, and most importantly, the willingness to stop illegal voting. Until we have elections that everybody, regardless of party affiliation or political philosophy, can rely on as being safe and secure, we will no longer be a constitutional republic, but a banana republic. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
And we're back with Trevor Kitchen. Trevor, the idea of regulators or regulations seems to be that it protects the crooks and not the people. And it's fairly obvious when you have a 1% tax, it's just lip service to pretend that it's all for business. But really what it is just yet another legal financial scam to protect those in power. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. It doesn't seem that the people are even getting a look in all of this. And yet every constitution that's ever written around the world is all about protecting the people against the government, and it's the governments of the world that are making more laws to harm the people in all of this. It seems that all of this is coming to a head and that you're living this in real time, in real life, and that all of this at least means that we are going to get somewhere out of it. It's just that we're in a race against the clock to get our lives back and our, in fact, not only our country, but our planet back altogether. It's truly a momentous problem in all of it. Do you sometimes get the time to take stock in all of this and wonder that if this there is a purpose in all of this, that you have to live this out for a greater outcome than just your own life? Or is it just too difficult when you're fighting literally every day just for the semblance of a life that you once had?
Well, no, I mean, absolutely not. I'm thinking about the future. I'm not thinking for myself here. I wouldn't be on radio if I was. I would just go off and get on with my life. I'm thinking about my children and the future generations. Mm. This is what this is about, Jason. It's not about just me. I'm 72 nearly. My life will be over soon. So I'm not really bothered about me. I'm trying to set things right before I move on. And that's what culture is about. It's about passing knowledge from one generation to the other before it's lost forever. And they're doing a damn good job of trying to eliminate that handover from one generation to the next. You mentioned quickly about regulators, and I think you're spot on. One of the first questions I asked in the early days of this manipulation of the currency was, who funds the regulators? Mm. And I got a very vague sort of answer back for it, but it was, the banks. The banks fund the regulators because they're members and they pay a membership fee. So my next question was, well, if the banks are paying, where's the separation of duties? Is there any separation of powers here? And aren't there conflicts of interest in that? Because if they're paying you, the regulators, the fees, then they can manipulate those regulators, the outcome of the regulator, you know, investigations and so forth.
Mm, mm.
So that was the piece I picked up on the regulators with you. They're not doing their jobs properly as far as I'm concerned. And it's certainly not the whistleblower offices. And there was a huge article in the Bloomberg again just this last week, 3 days ago, about people blowing the whistle to the regulators, and the regulators were, you know, not paying out any awards to these people. They just take the information and they use the information to make new loopholes for their banker friends, and especially if it's financial issues that people are reporting to the regulators. If it's a small industry, they tend to go after them. But as soon as it touches financial institutions, especially the major ones, the insurance companies, pension funds, and banks, they use that information, I get the feeling, as a way of saying, well, we've got a weakness here, let's fix it. And that's been brought to our attention by the public. Thank you very much, public. Go to hell. In fact, we'll go and target you now. That's the feeling I've got. But yes, it's about everyone. This is about the future. If this isn't fixed, we're going to have a serious problem with the powers, you know, the powers that these governments have over silence in public, how they take all the profits and transfer them into the hands of a few. And this is all surrounding, you know, the big conglomerates, all based, a lot of them in Switzerland, with the banking industry, as we know, the Bank of International Settlements. He just told us the other day, the head of the Bank of International Settlements, we want to know what you're spending every cent on. Yes.
What?
That's what he did. Every cent. With this new digital currency, they have the right to know what public is spending every single cent of their money. It's not good enough to just have. And by the way, he mentioned that all the high street banks will be closed. It will only be the digital currency will be run by the central banks, the, you know, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of Deutschland, and the Bank of England, and the Central Bank of Switzerland. They will be the ones who you will hold your digital currency with, so that they can monitor every single cent that you spend as a public person. Well, this sounds to me like a distraction. They are doing this to distract public away and make us responsible for everything that we're doing. Meanwhile, they get on with their big mission. It's a distraction.
Yes.
It's to keep occupied, for sure.
Yeah, indeed. The interestingly, on the program last night, I had a fellow called Tim Price, who runs Price Value Partners out of the UK, a finance organization, and he said he'd read an article just last week out of reporting out of Nigeria that a central bank digital currency trial in that country went so poorly that less than 0.5% of the entire country participated in it, which was absolutely magnificent music to my ears to know that the general public is certainly, at least in Nigeria, rejecting it wholeheartedly. Perhaps you can argue different reasons why, but it's a very, very good sign. And I'm glad that they trialed it in Nigeria, because if they'd trialed it in my country of Australia, it probably would have got a 50 to 60% uptake because people would have just gone along to get along like they did with the vaccine.
Right.
And as we know, in Nigeria, they had a very, very low vaccine rate, only around 5 to 7%. And ironically, there was no effect from Omicron. They've only had one or two deaths from COVID this year. And in Australia, where we were neck and neck with Nigeria, despite them being eight sizes more populous than us, we've had over 10 or 11,000 deaths this year from COVID in the period of Omicron, with the country highly vaccinated. So it's a very, very interesting point in all of that. And it should provide some form of relief to yourself and to our listeners here. Trevor, with only very much only about a minute to go, I just want to get an upside. How are you looking forward to the good parts of your life going into Christmas this year, as difficult as it is? How do you make peace with yourself and provide a little bit of comfort and joy that perhaps others who are really struggling at this time may be able to borrow off someone who's doing it even tougher than they are?
Well, this whole episode has affected our health drastically, but I must say, when I look at other people around the world, I still feel quite blessed. I mean, we're still reasonably healthy, and okay, I won't be with my family this year. That's for 5 years now. We won't be anywhere. We'll have to do that over Skype or something. But otherwise, it's going to be tough. It's going to be the same as last winter, actually. And I thought last winter we'd got over this and everything was clear. But the Swiss are clearly not going to lift this arrest warrant. They're going to persecute me for the rest of my life. And it's not a good situation, but we've got to find a place to live. And we're now looking again for exile somewhere. But where do you go in this world? You know, it's global.
That's right. Sorry, Trevor, we've run out of time. I apologize for that. We have to go to the news. That's Trevor Kitchen on TNT Radio.